mark on my other paper.
Sounds like an excuse. Okay, Mother, you're a Hadassah. We'll let you go first then.
Okay, all right. I just am blown away by the Psalms 19:7.
Okay.
Page 36.
Yeah.
We just didn't read it.
Right.
And right. It's like, oh wow, that it just makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember reading this now, probably nearly 20 years ago, and seeing that there's a restoration for the soul. And it's very interesting because this verse will actually work really well when we start working on the book of James. Because James, one of the things that James, Yaakov, his name is, he will... talk about to some length, not extraordinarily comprehensive, but a good length, and that is wisdom. And so here you have, it's interesting because he says, you know, one of the key, James Yaakov says that one of the keys that you need for basically the perfection of life is chokmah or wisdom. And so all this is all tied very well together. So I felt it quite interesting to know that it's the Torah that makes you perfect, and that it is the restoration of the soul. And we'll probably talk a little bit about that this evening.
I had been asked by someone not too terribly long ago what was going to happen to all, I'm going to say, our forefathers. That's the answer right there. That's the answer to the question that I was asked. It's like, oh, okay. I really didn't have the answer at that moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, of course, it's right there.
Well, we're not very far away now from Rosh Hashanah. 16 days, 15 days, something like that. And the... judgment of Rosh Hashanah and discussions on Yom Kippur are, they're there to let you know, and it says specifically on Rosh Hashanah that the books are open for the living and the dead. And so the question has to be, okay, I thought the dead were judged, that they had been judged. And the answer to that question is they have been judged, but they have not been judged for this year. And you say, well, you know, they're dead. They don't, you know, there's nothing that they can do or nothing that they will receive more punishment or more reward for. And that is not true. And that is because they've left a heritage. So if the heritage they left was wicked, then they will receive to themselves wickedness. So a man through his siblings can receive more punishment because of the act of his siblings, or his children, excuse me. If his children are righteous, then even though he was not a very good person, he or she, they receive merit to their reward because they raised righteous children. So in the long run, it's not said and done until it's said and done, or as they say, the fat lady sings, or whatever that means. So the idea of judgment and everything is in the Torah. Now there's another idea, and I say this out of the opening chapters of Bereshit, of Genesis, that when Adam, it says he made all of the creatures to pass before him, and then whatever he called them, that was their name. Now there's a couple of things about that. Number one is that the way that it could be read, because those chapters are still very Saotic, is that he called them, but he called them forth as he saw them in the spiritual world. So they were existent in the spiritual world, but they were not yet existent in the material world. So in order for God to restore something, all he has to do is just call it by its name. And if he calls it by its name, it has to be perfected or be the essence of that name. So if I have an error and he wants to repair the error, all he has to do is call me by my name. And then that will cause all of the things as the Torah to turn back into what it's supposed to be. Okay. Okay, I'm just making sure I got everything going here. Okay. Give her a Sheva.
It's the passage right below the Psalms 19:7, probably the middle of that next paragraph, where mm-hmm. it says, without the Torah's mention of a thing, because mm-hmm. just like you were talking about a word, nothing can exist because the Torah is the structured cosmos. When we labor to study, teach, and follow its teachings, we restore the world to its pristine state. I thought, because you had spoke about that times before, and that just kind of makes your mind go crazy.
Well, and here again is the same idea, right? So if the cosmos is on its ear, so to speak, it is messed up for whatever reason, all God has to do is call a thing by its name,
right,
and it will be repaired just by him calling it by his name. I have a little story that I'll have to fish out the book and read the story. And it's one of those stories that you have to think in terms of allegory and of so'od, because it's definitely not something that is for sure. Yeah.
Which one is it?
Health, Money, and Love, I think.
Sinner, is it in your room or is it in your bedroom?
I think it's in the bedroom a little. I'm not sure. Okay, very good. We have been talking and talked last week about, of course, the Torah. And looking on page 35, I think we spoke about this some last week. And this word, if you go to Romans 10, chapter 10, verse 4, you will read, there, that it says, for Messiah, I'm reading the New King James, and I'll just read it like it reads in the New King James, and then I'll translate it the way you should understand it. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. Now, just to read that verse just like that is absolutely unintelligible. It makes absolutely no sense, because keep your finger there. Let's go back to Luke. And we read this last week, chapter 1. There were in the days of Herod, the king of Yehuda, certain Cohen named Zechariah, of the division of Abijah. His wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elisheba. They were both righteous before God, walking in all of the commandments and the ordinances of the Lord blameless. Now go back to 10 and 4. And then tell me how you can understand that if it was the Torah that, if it was the Torah that made them perfect, then what's going to make you perfect in this case? If there is no Torah, or the Torah is over with, the end of the Torah. You see the question?
How can there be the end of law?
Right. How can there be the end of the Torah?
Because there is no end of Torah.
Right. As far as we understand, but this is one of the verses that they will read to you. But this verse is intentionally translated this way so that it'll make you think that there is no Torah anymore and there's no law, and therefore that the righteousness that has to come some other way. And of course, they're saying that the righteousness comes through Yeshua Mashiach. It doesn't come through Yeshua. It comes through faithful obedience, but the situation would read as if, you know, as long as you believe in Yeshua, then you don't have to worry because you'll be made righteous. And that's like we talked about in chapter 8 and verse 1. It says that there's no condemnation to those who are in Yeshua HaMashiach. Okay, the reason there's no condemnation is because they're Torah observant. And being Torah observant, there is no justice or no thing that is against them. But now here in Romans 10 and 4, this verse should read like this. For Messiah is the goal of the Torah for righteousness to everyone who believes. So then it means that he is the righteous model for everyone. But it is the Torah. He is the goal of the Torah. So if you want to understand what the Torah is and how the Torah is to be followed and lived out, then you have to see the life of a Messiah. Okay? Make sense?
Okay. Repeat that again. For the Messiah is the goal what?
Of the Torah.
Of the Torah.
Okay? So in other words, if you want to understand what the Torah is trying to accomplish, okay, let's go backwards and go to... Romans 8 and 14, for as many as are led by the Ruach of God. Okay, this refers to the oral Torah, the breathing out of the Torah. Those will be, or those are, the sons of God. Okay, so this reference is not just saying anybody that wants to be a part of the group can be a part of the group, and they can be called a son of God. But it is a direct reference to, firstly, the B'nai Yisrael, the children of Israel. Secondly, to the kings of Israel, to the priests of Israel, etc. And to say this phrase in Hebrew, it's a Ben Elohim. And this is also what, keep your finger there, let's go another verse, go back to Mark 1. This is the beginning, or this is the chief part of the Masorah of Yeshua HaMashiach, Ben HaElohim. Okay, now what it says is the son of Elohim, Elohim being plural, but it's indicative of God. But Elohim also means judge, okay? So he could be the son of a judge. And His Eminence and I were talking about Chacham Yosef. Now, Chacham Yosef, I'm speaking about Yeshua's father, Yaakov's father, Yehuda's father, etc. Okay? So here we have three Torah giants in the Nazarene Codicil that have been fostered by Joseph, the father of Yeshua. Okay? But we also have to say and give credence and credit to Miriam, Mary, because she was the mother of these three boys. Does that make sense? So the boys, which you should be able to understand quite easily. Now let's ruin it again. Let's go back to Luke. Instead of reading this as Zechariah, first of all, Joseph is not a priest, but he most certainly is of the house of David, of Davidic line. And so we could say that in the days of Herod, there was a man named Joseph, and his wife's name was Miriam. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and the ordinances of the Lord blameless. You see what happened? So if that is the situation, if it's the Torah that makes them blameless, then we can understand their walk. Now, here, back to Romans 8:14, it said, "For as many as are led by the Ruach Elohim," the words or the breath of the speaking of Elohim, which is the judges. They will be the sons of God. We did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear. Okay, so the bondage is referring to the way we lived in Egypt, Mitzrayim. But you received the spirit of adoption. Now, it's interesting because here the word spirit has been changed. The idea of the spirit is changed here. The spirit of adoption means that speaking to the Gentiles, they have received what's called the nefesh, the soul, Yehudi, the Jewish soul, which is also the spirit. Okay? Understanding this, when the Gentiles have only life, let's say, they have no motivation for the Torah or for spirituality. That means that either they don't have a spirit, or that spirit inside of them is dormant. If they receive what is called the Ruach HaKodesh, which Chacham Safek talks about in Acts chapter 10, about Cornelius, and then he said, look, they've received the spirit. They've already received. It's not that they started talking in tongues and doing all this. It means they received the Nefesh Yehudi. If they have received the Nefesh Yehudi, he said, look, he said, if they received the Nefesh Yehudi, he said that we need to baptize them. We need to immerse them. And there's some discussion about circumcision, but they most certainly would have been ritually circumcised. That's a very difficult thing to discuss, but nonetheless, okay? So here the whole purpose is to, or the goal of God is to bring us to the Torah, but it's that God, His purpose is to bring us to be like His Son. So, verse 16, 8:16, the Ruach Himself bears witness through our spirit that we are the children of God. So that means the Shekinah. Here you're talking about two different types of the Spirit. The Spirit already has had three different meanings just within a couple of verses, okay? So the Spirit here Himself is referring to the divine presence of God. Okay, so the divine presence will resonate with your spirit and tell you, well, does it tell you that you're one of God's children? And then obviously from that, you need to be studying the Torah. Okay, now let's go to verse 28. This verse is so many times so misunderstood. For we know that all things work together for good to those who love God. So that's the way everything works together, is as long as you love God. But now, it doesn't mean just, you know, standing and raising your hands and say, I love God. It means that you are actually devoted to God in what is called the avodah, which is service. You're serving God. So it said, those who love God, to those who are the called. Okay, he's not saying everybody. He's saying those that are, and we say this, as he says, Hakam Shaul says in Ephesians, he says to those who are selected or elected. Hakam Safet said it a few weeks ago in 1 Peter. He said that there are those of you who have been selected to live in diaspora, in the exile. But look, those who are the called according to his purpose or for God's purpose. Okay, so it's telling you that everything's going to be good and everything is going to work toward one goal, and that goal is accomplishing the purpose of God. So then that begs a question. What is the purpose of God? So if you don't know the purpose of God, you can say, oh yeah, everything's working toward the good, but you don't have a clue why you're saying that. And you don't have any clue to measure whether it really is good or really is bad. Okay? So verse 29. For whom he foreknew, these that he knew before time was an existing part of the cosmos. He predestines to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. And so here he's speaking about both the Messiah and Israel. Israel being the firstborn among many brethren is a meaning, or it means that they have accomplished the goal that God has set for them. Any of that makes sense? Now I want to go back to Torah Seder, page 34.
You playing on the papers? It's really funny.
He just like lays over it.
You need to put another table in front of that so he can lay on that table, and yeah, you can have.
He's doing something. He loves grandma.
Okay, 34, page 34, the very bottom. All those who sinned without or against the Torah will also be punished because of their lawlessness. Okay, this was evident from what we said in Matthew last week. Matthew 7:23, we said, Yeshua says to them, you workers of iniquity, and its Greek meaning is anomos, those who are without and or against the Torah. So it's interesting here because Hashem does something quite interesting. He says that, and Hakam Shaul says, all those who sinned without the Torah will perish because of their lawlessness. Okay, but the thing is, they will perish because of their lawlessness. But let's read on. It said, and those who sinned under the Torah will be judged by the Torah. Now let's ask ourselves a question. Who is he talking about? So the question would be, are the Christians that we know, are they lawless? Are they without the Torah?
Some,
absolutely some. But not necessarily all. Okay? So let's understand it like this. Do they have the Torah? They have the Torah, but they do not have an understanding of the Torah or how to fulfill the Torah, how to live by the Torah. And so in some respects they have the Torah, but they are against the Torah in some respects. Although this idea, believe it or not, is still very young. It wasn't before Luther, Martin Luther. It was not a idea to be free from the law, from the Torah. It was not an idea in Christianity. Originally, it was not. If you went back to Augustine, let's say, he would not have told you that you are free from the Torah and you can't do what the Torah is telling you. This idea is very, very young. And so now the idea is that, yeah, they do have a piece or a part or some understanding of the Torah. Listen, I don't care how smart or, you know, how intelligent some of the pastors are. They may say that you're free from the law, but they do not want you to be free from the law because they want to try to at least teach you morality. They don't want you to be out on the street, you know, shooting guns and stuff, you know, robbing banks and things like that. The ministers who teach in the pulpits are not looking for that, but they don't realize that what they're doing is they're cutting their nose off to spite their face, so to speak. They're not realizing that they're throwing away the best tool they have to produce an honest community that will serve the community the appropriate way. But now look, they have a form of the Torah. As much as we might like to say, oh, they're lawless or this or that, you cannot, if you were to go back and erase, quote, the Christian influence on the cosmos from the time that it actually deviated from being Jewish, you still cannot 100% say we don't want Christianity. Why? Because they are a moral force in the world, and they are trying to, at least in one measure or another, keep people from being absolutely. And so those who sinned will be judged by the Torah. So are the Christians going to be judged by the Torah? So, you can see now as it continues, for those who hear the Torah are not found innocent before God. But those who actively walk, who had the power of self-control from the Torah, will be declared innocent. So in other words, those who walk, it's a halakhic term, it's a phrase meaning halakha. Those who conduct themselves after the Torah will be declared innocent. Go back to Romans 8 and 2 now. Okay, you see, there is no condemnation to those who are in Messiah. Why? Because they walk the right walk. And as a result, they have been declared innocent. They didn't get declared innocent when they said, yep, Yeshua is going to be the one that I'm going to follow. That didn't make them innocent. And that's why the passage in Matthew says what? It said, I never knew you. You try to cast out devils. You try to do all this stuff. But I never knew you. And we've said it quite clearly in the last week or two. That guess what? If Yeshua was to come to earth this coming weekend on Shabbat, you would find him in the Esnoga. On Sunday morning, you would find him in the Esnoga, in the congregation and the synagogue. So when the Gentiles who do not have the written Torah instinctively do what the oral Torah demands, they're a principle to themselves, even though they do not have the written Torah. What is it? 1:15. Okay. One of the things I've harped on many, many times is that it was the oral Torah that God used to create the cosmos. From the phrases, let there be, to whatever. We're not told every finite detail of what Hashem did when he created the cosmos, every word that he said. But if he said, let there be light, then there was light. And that was it. There was light. And so, some Gentiles, are smart enough to understand that you cannot do certain things. And you'll find morality sometimes in some of the Gentiles who are not considered to be believers, Christians, or otherwise. You'll find morality sometimes in some of them that you would not anticipate. Sometimes they're holier than the holy rollers. That's right. So, this doesn't mean that they will not be judged by the Torah. It is inevitable. You have to be judged by the Torah. Just a side note.
Judgment doesn't always have to be bad either, though.
True. True. Okay, just for clarity's sake, there's a problem in, if you've already downloaded next week's Torah Seder, you'll see that there's a redundancy that picks up what is on page 37 and 38 where it talks about normal mysticism. We'll talk about that next week. This piece will be in that commentary. Sometimes it's a little confusing if you look at the schedule that we use to develop what has to be involved in the commentaries. Sometimes, because there are more or less weeks in a given year, then what has to happen is we have to accommodate that. This next session will be a single portion, and then the following one after that will be a three portion piece of literature. Dr. Elishev has already been there and done that. Now, I have said this before, and I will work on this a little bit to try to clarify. When God created the cosmos, it is the nomos, is the word in Greek, which is the Torah. Go to page 39, you will see that there's a list at the top, especially 39, of words that mean Torah. Instruction, direction, mitzvah, chokh is a super rational law. Like, you know, why do we have to have a thread of blue in our tzitzit? Mishpat means judgments. These are specifically from the Beit Din, the Bat Din, the multiple. Halacha, divine teachings, revelation of the divine will, the prophetic moral exhortations, rule, sin defined, and a guide. Okay, so we said that last week, I believe it was, we said that the tree is good married to evil. And the only thing that can create, the only sibling that can be produced by that is confusion. Can you see that in the progeny of Adam and Chava's children? So the first young man that comes out is confused. He's absolutely confused. His twin brother, everybody knows they were twins, right? Mm-hmm. Huh?
They were more than that.
Well, they were twin brothers, but they had four sisters. Okay? And, well, it says, it doesn't say she conceived again, it said she bore again. She conceived, and then she bore Cain, and she bore again, and his name was?
Abel.
And then there's a hint inside of the Hebrew text, the way that it reads, and it makes an allusion to feminine things going on, and so you understand that there were sisters involved as well. Okay, that wasn't our question, but you see that when God created the cosmos and the hosts of all the heavens, the hosts of all the heavens are not automatrons, but guess what? They have a job to do, and they're going to do that job, and that is their job to do. And excuse the expression, become hell or high water. It's going to be done. Okay, there's a story in the book of Daniel where The angel comes and said, I was would have been here 3 weeks ago, but the Prince of Persia held me back. Michael is there fighting now. I'm paraphrasing the story. And he said, I have to go back. But God heard you the very first day. So you understand not so much that there is a warfare in the heavens, but the warfare was trying to restrict the reception of a divine message to Daniel. So what right does this Prince of Persia have to see to it that Daniel doesn't get the message? Does he have a right to do that? No answer? Yes, no?
He has no right. Can't have a right.
You sure can.
We can?
Absolutely. It's his territory to rule. It's God ordained. God gave him the rule. But that doesn't mean God can't intervene as he did and the angel got through, correct? Okay, so what this does is it establishes for us an awareness of the fact that there are good angels and bad angels and bad angels. Three groups, not two groups, three.
Good angels, bad angels, and then bad angels. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Okay, we'll define them. Number one, the first group of angels is the dominant portion of the angels, and they are angels who ensure that the Torah will be fulfilled. So many natural laws and many other things are at their use to ensure that Torah is observed. Okay? And if it's not observed, they have the authority and the power, the ability to do things that will punish humanity for their lack of Torah observance. Or, probably more so, but still the lack of Torah observance, but also their resistance against the Torah. The second group of angels is a group of angels that said, we are going to rebel because you created man, man in general. And within man, man has the capacity to do wrong or to do evil. And you, God, choose not to punish him immediately for his actions. Okay, so they hate humanity by and large. So this is one group of angels that just dislikes humanity all over. You could understand that that was the original light bearer. Now I'm going to say something that people, you know, if you have store-bought teeth, just hold on for a second, because Genesis starts off in a way where we can see that the light bearer fell. Right? You see this because there is the Spirit of God hovering over, this is the Spirit of Messiah, hovering over the waters. It's not hovering, it's agitating the waters to make the waters hot. Warm enough to produce life, and I'm not talking about evolution, so don't go there. But that group of angels, which is said to be one third, okay, isn't it interesting to see, you know, in Christianity you hear that there's, you know, a character that leads one third of the angels, and that leaves two thirds of them as being good angels. That's not true. How many thirds are there? One, two, three. Okay, so the light bearer fell. What was his designation? What was his title?
Lucifer.
So what's the new light bearer's designation? If I don't have an error, if you're the chief of the police and you resign your job, what title do they give the next guy that takes that job?
The same title.
So what do we call the new light bearer?
A light bearer.
Lucifer.
Sure. Loose lights.
Now you say that in church next Sunday morning, and you're going to have people, a whole bunch of people, like drag you off of the
fire. I told you, hang on to your store bought teeth. Okay, so.
You're like, oh yeah, right. Watch that. I'm going to jerk you.
Okay, so the second group of one third detests humanity by and large because he has the capacity to sin. But God said in the process, he said, yeah, I know he can sin, but I'm not going to see his sin. I'm not going to look at his sin. So Christians say God can't see sin. That's wrong. God does not look at sin. Now it gets worse. If he can't see or he doesn't look at sin, the only thing that he looks at is the righteous acts we do during the day. How much is he seeing us all day long? Okay, there's one more third of angels, right? Wouldn't you like to know who they are and what they're up to? The third group of angels hates the Jews. Why? Because we received the Torah. And they did not think that the Torah belonged to the earth. They said the Torah belonged in heaven. But Moshe comes and he takes the Torah away from them because of his wisdom, his intelligence, etc. And he brings it to us. So we have one third of the angels that are against the Jewish people because they are the recipients of the Torah. Now let's do a little math. One third is going to ensue that the Torah is fulfilled in the cosmos. One third hates humanity by and large, and the other one hates the Torah observant Jews. So the Jew is quite fortunate, right? How many angels does he have to contend with? How many parts of the thirds does he have to contend with? Two on a normal day, right? The ones who hate humanity, Jews are part of humanity, and the others who hate the fact that we received the Torah. Does the other ones ever get mad at the Jews and do anything negative against the Jews?
If they're not following Torah.
If they don't follow Torah, then guess what? All the angels of heaven are on their case. Did they teach you that in Sunday school?
Sure they did. That's a new concept. A totally new concept.
Nomos, thus, and it's very interesting. Is it in this one here? Let me see if I can find it. There was a lawyer. It was a lawyer who wrote a legal brief, said what I have said here. It's not my invention, but he didn't know what he said. He was secular. He had no idea to know what he said. But you look back on page 39, second paragraph, third paragraph down, it said, therefore, we must deduce that the oral Torah, the nomos, is the fabric of the cosmos. Consequently, we inhabit a nomos, a normative universe. We constantly create and maintain the world's right and wrong of lawful and unlawful and valid and void. See, yes, this is the individual footnote 75. This is a brief that he sent to the Supreme Court in 1982. So you see, he said it exactly right. He does not realize the power of what he said, but what he was saying is that the whole cosmos is structured and ordered and it's legal. So this is back to what we were saying last week, where we said there is no such thing as freedom in the sense of, you know, you don't have to do this or do that. There's no such thing as that idea. It's ludicrous to think it. You know, some guy gets in an airplane and he says that the airplane will do Mach 3. So, you know, he says, okay, I'm going to make it do Mach 4. The airplane won't do that. What's going to happen when he tries? You better hope that the ejection seat works right. Yeah, and there were those that, you know, they weren't really trying to defy nature. They were just trying to find the limit. Can you imagine what it must have been like for Jaeger to go through the sound barrier? In that airplane, X1, and it's shaking and vibrating. He didn't know if it was going to stay together or not. But he had enough tenacity and courage to do what? So what Robert Cover said is absolutely true, that we live in a normative universe and we constantly create and maintain a world of right and wrong. I've said this many times as well. There is no law. Well, now there are laws. We don't need a law to say don't throw your litter on the freeway. But we have people who are so intelligent that they what? Now we have something that's interesting. One of the, at the present, one of the largest and most powerful hurricanes is headed toward Florida. As of 2 o'clock this afternoon, they said that the speed of the winds inside of the hurricane were 185 miles an hour. That means that whatever is in its path will be decimated. There's nothing that can stand up to it. Is this the work of one of the angels that are a part of one of those three groups?
If they hate humanity, it's got to be. They destroy humanity.
Go to the final paragraph. Can you mute that, Elizabeth? We'll just start at the beginning of the paragraph. So this brings us to the age-old question of why the Torah begins with Bereishit 1:1 instead of Shemot 12:2. In other words, it doesn't start off with what we would consider halacha, laws and rules. It considers it that way, that it's not exactly the case, but nevertheless it would seem like that's not rules and laws. Okay? The general deduction is that God wanted to show himself as a creator, and therefore just in giving, just or righteous in giving the Eretz Israel to the Jewish people rather than to the nations. Allegorically, God wants to reveal to us that the cosmos is the divine nomos narrative, the divine story of his eternal benevolence. Furthermore, we can derive from the written Torah a pattern of nomos rhetoric. The nomos narrative is halachic story being told through the medium of time. We must also note that God gave us 613 mitzvot through the medium of the special nomos narrative, I, God, brought you out of Egypt. The narrative is established on the grounds for God's mitzvah and halakha. Therefore, the covenantal nomos is given in legal rhetoric because this is the true essence of the cosmos. It is for this reason that the scientists refer to the principles of the cosmos as laws of the nature. Okay? What is important for us is to derive from this that God's laws, Nomos Torah, is always couched in narrative form. It cannot be wrenched from the rhetorical medium. Likewise, when read nearly all legal documents, they are joined to a narrative rhetoric. All court of law depend on narrative and rhetoric as means of a legal decision making. Therefore, we cannot separate law, nomos, Torah from a narrative. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, you violate a law. And it says this is such and such under such and such penal code. Okay? So when you go to stand before the judge, what does the judge ask for?
First thing you ask is, are you guilty? And you have a bit.
Yes, what did you do?
Okay.
And you say? So you see, you can go to court, and you can be guilty of a crime, but when you get there, the judge is going to ask you, what did you do? Or at least in the process of the legal unfolding of the situation, case, etc., the narrative is going to come out. I was in the court this previous year, 2 years ago now, and it took us 5 days to get the narrative worked out. What were you doing on such and such a date at such and such a time? That's narrative. Okay, so you see that what I'm saying here is when we read the Torah, what are you reading about? And Aaron and his sons put on these garments, and they... Is that legal narrative? Yeah, they had to. Why did they have to? Because it's legal. Because God said you have to. So don't think that, you know, reading about why did Cain kill his brother Abel, Havel. Interesting, you know what? You know what is being intimated right there? Havel means the breath. And they both knew, because it was the 14th of Nisan, what was required for them to give. But now, let me teach you the next step of Jewish literature. Jewish literature, in order to explain this situation, to explain Chaim, Cain, being this bad boy that he was, the Jews always try to fix it so that you understand that there's something behind the ground, the story that we have to deal with. And so they said that the reason that Cain was evil is because he was from the serpent. Okay, was he really from the serpent? No, he wasn't from the serpent, but the story is told in those ways so you can say, yeah, this is what happens when you sleep with the devil.
But if they ate from the tree of you know, good married with evil, and since they did, he was conceived from the devil.
Well, Eve and Adam eat from the tree, but the children do not. We don't have any record of them eating of the tree, as far as I know. But the point being,
sins of the father,
okay? But but again, it is the sins of the father, because, you know, if Chava is sleeping with the serpent, where is Adam? Okay, so I'm going to close here, but hopefully you can understand that one of the things that should happen whenever you see the word nomos is that you should receive an understanding that the entire cosmos is governed by nomos. Now, there, as I said, is right now, they say that the hurricane is possibly the largest recorded in history. And I just told you that God is just. But you know what Abraham said? God, will you destroy the city if there's 50 people, righteous people there? Now, I'm not going to say that there are no righteous people there. But what I am going to say is, I don't care if there are or there aren't. Because there's another rule that says God's providence is in control. So what is God's providence? You do something, let's just, we'll talk in terms of being Jewish, just for the sake of the conversation, you do something you're really not supposed to do, you know. I mean, it doesn't have to be a major infraction. You're not, you know, committing adultery or doing something like that. But you do something, you really should have been kind to this person, but you weren't kind to them. Or something that we might, in some respects, say, you know, that wasn't a major crime. And God will say perhaps the same thing. That wasn't a major crime, but guess what? You're going to be punished anyway. Whether you like it or not, you're going to be punished. Now the question for me and you as Jewish people is, when are you going to be punished? You want it now or you want it later? So in other words, what you're saying, if you say get it over with, is that you want to go through the punishment now, so when we get there, everything is the good stuff. And we don't have to worry about any of the bad stuff that happens. That happened and being punished for it. Okay? So, you know, why did that mosquito bite you?
I don't know, but I wish they'd leave me alone.
They will if...
if I'm a good girl. Oops.
Why did that bee sting you?
Why did I break my toe?
Why did I break my toe?
See, the rabbi said I was a bad girl.
See, in this congregation, if you're going to be sick, you have to turn it in to the Beit Din 3 weeks before and have it signed in triplicate.
Ask permission?
In triplicate, yes.
Okay.
And get permission.
Well, how come you don't do that?
I'm a rabbi. I don't
know. Oh, okay.
Okay, so let's...
I think we need to make a new verdict or a new law. You guys have to do it too, all three of you. I have to ask permission to be sick. I'm tired of you guys being sick.
It goes with the territory. Okay, so Providence is going to say, and it's by no means my... it's by no means my desire to see anyone suffer, good, bad, or otherwise. It's not my job. I don't have any desire to see anybody like that. But I would much rather have to suffer at whatever now than later. So I say that diabetes is a curse. And having to wrestle with it every day, there's no relief. There's no letting your guard down. There's no, holiday. Every day you wake up and you look at that number and you try to, you know, see whether you did it right or whether you did it wrong. Most of the time you pretty well know and you should be able to anticipate, but... so... what I'm saying is, if it is diabetes that I have to wrestle with, so be it. That's okay. That's my difficulty. That's my difficulty. And I'm, you know, I may say it's a curse or whatever, but nobody hears me go around and saying, oh, woe is me, because, you know, I have this thing to wrestle with. But if it is Hashem, God's divine providence, that I have to wrestle with that, then it's okay. I'd rather wrestle with it now and get it over and done with. I've said and taught that it is a Jewish idea that we all go to hell. That doesn't sound fun. But am I going to cry because I'm going to be punished in hell for however long I'm there? No, not at all. Why not? Because whatever it takes to make me pure enough to be able to stand in the presence of God, that's what I'm willing to endure so I can stand in the presence of God. Whatever purity is required, whatever mechanisms God has that I have to go through so I can have a relationship with Him and be able to communicate with Him, then that's fine. It'll be just fine. So, Hakam Shaul said, the letter kills. And all the Christians go running around, the letter kills, the letter kills. I say, good. And they look at me and go, what? It kills the things that will keep me from experiencing God and having a positive relationship with God. That's what it kills. And if that's what it kills, Paul said what? Mortify the flesh. Some of that Holy King James language. Cut it off. Don't let it have authority or control. So, guess what? The nomos is in control. And we should say every day, no matter what comes our way, I don't like it. And it's okay to say I don't like it, but it's God's providence.